This episode of The Stack was first broadcast on the 29th of November, 2014, on Monocle 24.
From the worlds of fashion and food, successful entrepreneurs reveal their fixation to print. One of Australia's most successful broadcasters and magazine editors tells us what inspires her both in the kitchen and on the editorial floor. And in Paris, one style icon explains why he had to start his own newspaper. And in Bristol via London, one magazine aficionado launches a handsome new indie title. All that and much more today on edition 118 of The Stack. This week on The Stack, we meet Donna Hay, author, TV cook, and tycoon in the making, as she tells us how her journey into magazines began and how she runs a tight but fun-filled ship in Sydney.
We're a really tight team. We muck around a lot, and I still have a really active role within the team. Like, it's my job to mix the drinks on Friday afternoon.
We also go to Paris to hear from that true icon of fashion, Karl Lagerfeld, on what print he likes to rustle through in the mornings.
I love daily papers. I mean, but some of them have problems because they're not well written. I think the survival of daily paper depends a lot on the way people write.
And we'll be welcoming magazine editor Elliot Stocks and have a flick through his new venture. All that and plenty more besides on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack, coming to you from Studio 2 here at Midori House with me, Tyler Brûlé. To start the program this week, we're going to hear from Donna Hay, food writer, author, broadcaster, and of course, editor-in-chief of the eponymous Donna Hay magazine. Launched in 2001, this magazine was a precursor to dozens of food and home titles that have followed since. With subscribers in 82 countries and 730,000 readers, Donna Hay's recipes and influence is spreading far beyond her Australian homeland. Earlier in the week, I caught up with Donna as she was in London with her new book in tow. We began by discussing her career in magazines and how it all started.
For me, I guess that I always go back to my core, which is working on the product. So I don't kind of get carried away with all the theatre and the PR around it. I'm not out very often. I just really love what I do, and I still work with my gang, and I still love going to work. So I think that that's really my strength, is that I'm in the office working and making sure that the product is the best that I can make it.
This is radio, so maybe you should paint a picture, because I'm sure many people would love you to demystify what work looks like. I mean, I've got one vision of maybe what the Donna Hay studio, kitchen, atelier setup might look like, but what is it?
Well, we have the top floor in a building in Surry Hills in Sydney.
Appropriately.
And, yes, appropriately. And I've divided it into three because there's three different types of work needs, I feel, for us. So we have an office type situation where people need to concentrate and write words and sub recipes and have desks and computers, you know, that kind of bit dull, boring stuff. You know, and we have the board and the art team, and I have a desk in there. And then we have a really big daylight studio and a kitchen. Everything's on wheels, so we can mix it around and just move it to how we want it for the day. So I'm very big on change. I know that not everyone is, but I like to change things up and move it around. So we have a very modular kitchen, but it has all domestic appliances in it. So like 10 domestic ovens, everything's domestic, because what we're doing is writing recipes for people at home.
Not for hotel groups.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So everything's domestic. So it's on this grand scale. And then we have the most amazing.
Do we want to give a plug for who the appliances come from, or are they a variety of companies?
No, they're from one. And you know what? They've been with me from day one. And whenever I ask them for anything, you know, it just appears.
Fisher & Paykel.
No, Smeg.
Okay.
Yeah, just all arrives. Ding.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, shiny, shiny new. And then we have a really large prop room that's highly organized by color and style.
Is that the third
and
zone?
No, it's
oh,
part.
Oh, we're still in zone two.
We're in two.
Okay.
And so that is next to the daylight studio. So it's all very open, but you can run in there really quickly as a stylist and know where the red ribbon is in the red ribbon drawer. And it's for highly OCD people, the prop room. And there's vintage wire and you know, it's because, as you know, photography, it's probably the biggest part of my budget, so we need to be quick. So it's really highly organized. Then we have this other crazy area where there's hot glue guns and nail guns, and we make up sets and things that we need.
So zone three is your office?
No, zone three is the creative zone. It's kind of like a big meeting room, come discussion room, come new products. And it's a little bit more crazy. It's a bit more theatrical, loud. That's the loud room.
I want to go back to zone two. Pretty much everything, of course, the magazine goes on location from time to time, et cetera. But when you, and I'm going to get gritty here, when you look at your budgets, et cetera, do you think that, to make this work and to ensure that we are making profit, as you said, photography is a big bill. Do you try to make sure that you're doing 50, 60% in that space as well, so it's working hard for you? Or do you feel that issue to issue, you drift?
We can't drift too far, but we do drift. And we do get sponsors on board to take us places when we can. But we probably can be up to 80% in the studio.
Right.
And just building sets. And
so I'm looking at the Christmas issue. So is most of Christmas in Surrey Hills?
Yeah.
Wow.
It is. See, I am head of HR as well as OH&S.
No one needs an HR department.
Yeah. If that window set falls on someone, come and see me.
Exactly.
I'll get you some sort of sticky plaster. You'll be fine.
Understood. I remember the first time I saw your credits was when Marie Claire, before it became even the international franchise that it is today, there was this Marie Claire lifestyle magazine came out to threaten and challenge the likes of Belle and Vogue Entertaining and Vogue Living and all of those things. And it was great. And then one day it was gone. Did you leave before that happened?
Yeah, I did.
So what you were saying is that it disappeared because you left.
I love that you say that. No, I don't think so. But, the only reason I left is because being a freelancer, you kind of dip in and out of an office. And the straw that broke the camel's back, as we say, was I was styling a big shoot for Marie Claire Lifestyle. And it was in some sand dunes. We had a block printed tent from Rajasthan. I had a white horse. I had a model, beautiful fabrics blowing in the wind, all the food, walked it, almost a kilometer into sand dunes. And then when I saw what the art director wanted to do with the film back in those days, it just broke my heart, absolutely broke my heart. And then I gave up after that. I almost actually left the entire business, publishing, full stop.
You go freelance, you go independent, you launch your own brand in a market which maybe wasn't as crowded as it is today in Australia, even though, of course, some favorite magazines have also disappeared in Australia. How did you do it? How did you set up your own shingle?
Oh, my goodness. So naive. So didn't know what I was doing. Put my head down.
Join the club.
Just had a go. It was crazy. It was so crazy. And yeah, I think I had 9 weeks to get the first issue out. I really just put my head down and panicked. And I guess when you're 31, it's probably the best time to do it because you're so oblivious to what could go wrong. And I was just, oh my goodness.
Now, for the funding, did you go to a big media company? Did you go to ANZ Bank? I mean, how did it all come about?
After the sand dune
after
story.
After the Rajasthan.
Yeah, after the Rajasthan block. Which ruined my life. I started to very arrogantly, as a 30-year-old, make up my own magazine on my studio wall. So I had my own daylight studio back
Everyone
then.
Has to have playtime, though.
Yeah. So I was kind of, if I had a magazine, this is what it would look like. So I started to make up a magazine on the wall and people started to find out about it. That's how I got two offers really quickly. I was meant to join Martha Stewart's team in New York, and I flew home to make my decision, and Lachlan Murdoch made me an offer for the magazine, and that's where it started.
And where it continues, I gather, as well.
Absolutely.
When you look at the state of media today, because obviously you are a property which doesn't just exist in print, but yet, if I think about the brand, it's still a paper brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Still a paper brand. Still books, still magazines. And, the transition into digital is interesting, but
but it's just that.
Yeah, it's a transition. And
we're still in it.
Yeah, we're still in it. It seems long. For someone who gets bored really quickly, the transition's very long.
But you get bored and you just think, might as well continue doing what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
We could go on about this for hours and hours.
Digital meetings. Let's have another digital meeting.
We're not going to have any digital meetings. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay,
even though this is being broadcast over the internet.
Yeah,
we don't need to talk about anything beyond that. If I and I can think back maybe a year, year and a half ago, Martha was sitting in your seat and I've been very rude, or my colleagues have been rude, because she had a glass of Krug last time she was here when she was in the studio. You don't. If you want one, we'll try to find one. But where are the barriers for your business, though? Because you're in many markets, and of course you have a huge following here, and the magazine does well on import and import in many other markets as well. But do you have a pretty confined view or defined view when you think back to that wall when you started conceiving this, knowing it might have extensions and you might work with other brands, etc.? Do you know how elastic it is still, where you want to go with it?
I'm a really bad planner and I just like to keep all options open. So I'm not sure how far it's going to go. I'm not sure when I'm going to get bored. I just kind of take it as it comes and just enjoy every day that's fun and crazy in my office.
That's all right.
Yeah.
This is just hit newsstands, and I believe it was probably out when I was in Sydney last week, but I didn't pick it up, but we get it in the office anyway. This is the Christmas special. What are you looking at right now? Mandarin edition, Portuguese edition, Hebrew edition? it's because I like that there's still purity. I like going back to the source. Of course, lots of people know there's a wonderful business model in licensing yourself 1,000 times. But then I always sort of feel personally drawn to the original edition. I'm always sort of worried that I'm missing something. Have they watered down the recipe? Have they put too many pomegranates in it in this market because it's the Middle East edition? Yeah. Where does it go?
I don't know. I look at the books in translation and obviously like the Dutch edition, the whole design is just ruined because the words are so much longer and it sort of kills me a bit. But what can you do?
Yeah.
I can't shorten the Dutch language, apparently.
Apparently not, no.
Apparently not.
No.
So, yeah, I don't know. I like the purity of how it's designed. What do you do when you put it in translation? You lose that detail, I guess.
Just before we go, you started by talking about the team, and I think that all great editorial brands are really about the team. Yes, you need a fantastic editor and publisher, et cetera, at the helm. But when you look back across that great studio and all of that natural light, is there pretty still an intact core audience that knows exactly what you're doing and have been with you on that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. My food director's been with me for 11 years. My managing editor just left for New York 7 years. We're a really tight team. We muck around a lot as creative teams too. And I still have a really active role within the team. Like it's my job to mix the drinks on Friday afternoon. And we have really strict rules about how we work. We work 9 till 5:30 really intensely and then everyone's kicked out. Because I believe if my team's going to deliver the most creative product for me, is they need to have a life outside the office. So we work like maniacs during that time and then I kick them all out.
Great. I hope no one from my staff is listening.
So sorry.
And that was food broadcaster and magazine editor Donna Hay. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. Short break right now. We're back right after this.
The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly audio guide to the world's best business minds. From industry giants and family outfits to the one-man bands and clever upstarts.
We saw all this immense amount of frustration by young people finding their first jobs, their second jobs, internships. And we said that's ridiculous that in this day and age, with all the technology we have, we can't solve that.
Tune in at 1900 hours London time every Wednesday to hear insider tips, big challenges, and sparks of insight. We take an hour-long tour of the worlds of fashion to food, timepieces to tech, and hear the founding stories of some of the smartest names around.
That's The Entrepreneurs, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 hours London time, in association with Pictet.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, of course, Karl Lagerfeld's influence in the world of fashion is well charted and rather plain to see. As head designer and creative director of both Chanel and Fendi, as well as heading his own successful label, Lagerfeld, he's, of course, an icon of style. Many people might not know, however, that Lagerfeld has a passion for print. Earlier in the month, I met Karl at his bookshop and atelier in Paris for a rather long interview, which can be found online through Monocle Films. In the following extract, Karl and I delve into what is going wrong and what is going right in the world of newspapers.
I love paper. I love newspapers. I think it was fun to do. It was not done like this before. You know, I worked for one day with papers like Metro, or I did Libération, I did Welt am Sonntag. I like that. So why shouldn't I not do it one day for myself?
Does that maybe reflect also what your breakfast diet looks like? Are you a Frankfurter Allgemeine, Neue Zürcher Zeitung, yeah. Le Monde, New York Times.
No, you don't have the Monde for the breakfast. It comes out at lunchtime. If you have the Monde for breakfast, it's an old magazine, old paper. It's from the day before. Huh? It's the only noon paper. Huh? But it's a good thing, because very often they have things the other don't have because they finished before midnight. Huh?
So in
I love daily papers. I mean, but some of them have problems because they're not well written. I think the survival of daily papers depends a lot on the way people write. There are not many great, what they used to call feathers, plume. And that makes it more banal. Because the language on the digital and all this is another thing. That is information. But on a paper, you want to sit down, read, and read something that was pleasant to read. Mm. Not just flat information, you can get that somewhere else. They have to make a bigger effort.
It's interesting listening to the press barons. They're always blaming it's digital's fault.
It's their fault also. You know, if they were geniuses with a new modern way to write like it used to happen in the past, but that doesn't exist. Mm. It's easily pretentious, and it's not much better than the information on the digital. I'm sorry. So then I understand that there are problems.
It's very interesting to look at Die Zeit right now, a newspaper which is actually growing. Everyone says a print is dead.
Yes, but also the level is better.
Of course, absolutely.
I mean, the Zeit I read, I love the Zeit. Huh? The Zeit magazine sometimes is a little too pretentious for me. Huh? I prefer the magazine from the Frankfurter once a month. You know, they did 8 times a month in the first year, not because of my cartoons, huh? My caricature. Now, from next year, they're doing so well, they do every month.
But what's in the DNA, do you think, in the German market that they've been able to sustain this?
I think it's also the fact that there are many different cities. There's not only one big city and the rest is Sleeping Beauty. I think there is something more complicated and more diversified in Germany than in other countries.
And that was Karl Lagerfeld with a view or two on the world of newspapers. And if you want to hear the entire interview and, of course, see it as well, please visit Monocle Films. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. More in a moment. And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Berlay. Now, to end the show, and as is the tradition on The Stack, we have a magazine review. Elliot Stocks is the co-founder and co-editor of the newish lifestyle magazine, La Gomme, and was previously the founder and editor of typography magazine, 8 Faces. He's also the creative director at Adobe Typekit. It's a bit of a full buffet and menu there that you've got for us.
It is.
Now, tell us a little bit, for people who aren't familiar with La Gomme. People familiar with the Swedish language will know what it means. Inspiration for the title for those who haven't come across it yet.
We are essentially a new lifestyle magazine that celebrates innovation and creativity. And we like to celebrate the work of the people that we've met on our travels who are doing interesting things, whether that's making a living from their passion or indulging in pastime activities that offer an escape from their day job. So, for instance, in the first issue, we have people like Eric Spiekermann, who's instead of retiring, he has actually set up his own letterpress studio in Berlin. And we have a designer from Facebook who, before going to work every day, he goes for a surfing session in the Pacific. So, yeah, there's quite a variety of people in there. A lady who runs a sustainable fashion company. And, yeah, it's about sort of celebrating some of these people that we've come across. And it's gone really, really well. And we're currently working on our second issue, which is going to be out in spring.
When you talk about, of course, the launch, the idea, and it going very, very well, what was the gap that you saw in the market? Because there are no shortage of titles as well, certainly from the indie side of things that have tried to chronicle the lives of people and their pursuits between sort of the day job and what happens when they're able to go home and do their daydreaming. Yeah, where do you see the opportunity?
I think there are two things. One, there's a lot of magazines around at the moment. I mean, we're in this huge independent publishing renaissance at the moment. And a lot of them we found that weren't really going into the level of detail that we want, that they would perhaps be big on the white space, big on the photos, but perhaps not get into the crux of what motivates some of these people. So that was something that we wanted to explore. Also, from a design point of view, I felt like there are a lot of magazines out there that were starting to kind of revolve around the same look. Mm. And I think there was an opportunity to do something different there. This is the first magazine that we've done where we've actually got distribution, actually put it in physical shops. So 8 Faces that we did previously, we relied on sales from our website,
right,
which worked out fine because it was very niche and a lot of type geeks who are really into all that. But with this being a little bit more broad in its audience, we wanted to actually put it out there into the shops of the world. Mm. So we actually got distribution deals for this one. And then seeing it actually in the shops, sitting next to, titles like some of the ones that we have here. It's nice to see that it's actually, it looks different. I feel confident that the cover stands out as something that doesn't look like a lot of the other lifestyle magazines out there.
You've gone for a metallic process on the front. Tell us a little bit about the typographic approach, because, I mean, interesting, just for those who haven't seen the magazine yet, we have a white strap across the one. We've got a nice sort of toothy matte stock. And you've gone for a very playful, lyrical script with, of course, using a silver metallic on the front cover. So you've broken a few rules because you haven't you certainly haven't crept it up the page. The fact that it sort of, you know, sits, you know, squarely, or not squarely, but certainly perfectly centered across the middle of the title, you know, traditionally would not be the most, you know, commercial move. But then, of course, you're living in a different space and you're fighting in a different area. You're not having to battle against supermarket weeklies, etc. I've explained one part of the cover. Tell us about your sort of thoughts on it, though.
Yeah, I mean, placing the title in the middle was my wife's idea. She's the co-editor, co-founder, as something to do that is different from what everybody else is doing. We decided to do silver foil. It's something that we actually did with Eight Faces and worked really well, and it really helped it stand out, so we actually did that. In terms of having it in the middle as well, it allows us to have the two cover images. So rather than relying on just one photograph or illustration to sell the entire concept, we've got two, which fits into the idea of sort of what Lagon means, which is this sense of balance, having just the right amount of something.
And priced at...
£10.
A confident £10, which is great. Just before we will go and talk about the other titles you brought in today, from a financing point of view, this is no small exercise. Of course, when you go to newsstand, you have to have a certain scale, because you have to take a punt, as we all know, very early on, and decide, you know, are you going to go print 10, 20, 5,000, whatever it's going to be. There's not a ton of advertising in it, so I always have to put my CFO hat on and say, you know, how did you get it out there and how do you finance it?
So we took a similar model that we did with Eight Faces, which is get in some partnerships from some existing companies that we had worked with in the past. So MailChimp, for instance, are our publishing partner. And we have a few other adverts in there. And the idea is that as long as we had enough to pay everybody who was involved, because that's something that's really important to us, and pay all of our printing costs, which, as you said, are kind of a little bit on the high side, given the stock and the silver foil, that we would be happy with sort of breaking even with the first issue. As has actually happened, we're actually profitable from the first issue, which we're really, really happy with, because we didn't set out to do that initially. And we've kind of kept advertising pretty light and tried to keep it very relevant. We are looking to up the advertising a little bit more for the second issue, just so that this can actually be a sustainable business.
And for those people listening, they can subscribe already. You said issue number two is on its way out for spring.
Yes, so. Issue two out in spring and issue three in autumn. And we're already selling 3-issue subscriptions.
Okay, so hopefully we can start sort of stuffing some stockings. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4 other titles. So yeah, I guess in the interest of also maybe getting some other fine bits of print under the tree, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with Another Escape. So they are a fellow Bristol-based publisher. We have a little collective in Bristol called BIP, Bristol Independent Publishers, which is us, Another Escape, Serial, Boneshaker magazine, quite a few different ones. And we've got together because Bristol has become kind of an accidental hub for the independent publishing revolution.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, what is interesting when we look at all of the titles, it's not a glossy world that you're in. And I don't mean sort of glossy from a commercial point of view, but it is it's a very matte place over in Bristol. What is that because you're all coming off of one press? There's only one type of paper stock available. What is it?
Ironically, I think almost all of us do use the same paper stock for covers and that. And you may notice that there is a little bit more foil happening now.
There is as well.
I like to think that we've had a small influence on that.
Another Escape. Why did you bring it in? What do you like about it?
So we're
aside from them being neighbors, but
that's it. Yeah, we're neighbors and friends with the editors. But Another Escape is really interesting with this issue, which is the fourth issue, which is literally hot off the press and sharing the printers. We have the advantage of getting to see stuff as soon as it comes out. This is actually a new design direction for them. So they've actually reshuffled the way that they do content a lot, and they're focusing on these key sections that they break down into. They have an angle on one particular piece, and then they let other people approach it from different angles. And design-wise, it's moved away from a lot of the whites that they've used previously, and they've changed the type system. It's actually a darker issue, partly because they have this nighttime theme. So it's a really interesting move for them to see them adding foil to the cover as well to make it a little bit more special and evolving the design, which now looks absolutely beautiful.
I'm going to make you whiz through the next three titles in about 2 minutes, just in the interest of time. What next?
So we have Toast Magazine, which is also hot off the press and also with a foil, this time in copper.
And not just hot off the press in terms of just being sort of a second or third. This is the debut issue.
This is the debut issue, that's right.
Toast, a celebration of food and ideas.
And these guys, I believe, are based in London. They use the same printers that we have in Bristol. But this, again, another beautifully put together magazine. There's a really lovely introduction in there from Jeremy Lee of Coivadis. Mm. And it celebrates, yeah, food in all its senses. One thing that really stood out there was a sort of photo interview with some of the people who wash dishes in some of the very, very big restaurants in Soho. So it's nice that it's exposing all of these different layers of the culinary experience. And again, just some beautiful photography, really, really lovely design in there.
Yeah, and there's even quite an interesting spread with a great use of infographics as well, but sort of almost in a very sort of hand-cut way. Very, very nice. Two more.
So we're jumping back to Bristol for Sidetracked magazine, mm-hmm. which is about travel and adventure. Some really beautiful pieces in there. Astonishing level of quality of some of their photos. Absolutely fantastic. They ran a website, they still are running a website, I think it's for about 2 or 3 years, and they decided to create a print edition last year. This is the second issue, and I'm seeing it absolutely everywhere, and I believe it's proving very, very popular.
And we'll wrap up on...
And lastly, we have Foreign Sons, who are from Australia, and this is a magazine dedicated entirely to the love of dogs. Again, much like Toast taking a slightly more slanted view on food, this is a slightly more slanted view on dogs. There's some very touching photo essays in there about things like street kids who are living with dogs and have this kind of shared existence, and again, just filled with some really, really beautiful photography. And the other side of dogs that might even tempt over people who are not particular dog people into the canine world.
Mm. I like about it as well is that it's truly global, and it doesn't feel that it's something which is just belongs to sort of one corner of the planet or other. So even sort of from an advertising point of view, I mean, we have Cloud 7 on the back, which is a German, it's a Berlin-based purveyor of fine goods for hounds. And then as you go through it, it just has this sort of wonderful feel. Outstanding cover as well. As you said, the new issue, I guess, of La Gomme is, probably not in press quite yet, but yet. Heading that way, and we'll be out for springtime. Elliot Stocks, we're going to have to leave it there. That brings us to the end of edition 118 of The Stack. Our producer today has been David Pleasant, and our studio manager is Nathan Cooper. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, back same time next Saturday, when it will also be the Monocle Christmas Fair. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, from me, Tyler Burleigh, goodbye.